We'll call the meeting to order. Just a note for folks, the committee's a little light staffed today with members because Ways and Means is going on at the same time, and I'm just going to get the meeting started, and I have to go to Ways and Means, and Representative Scott will take over. But we're going to start out with testimony on House File 607, so I'll bring it. We laid it over. I'll bring it back up. Yeah, we'll bring that back up, and then we'll take testimony that was last week, but they didn't get a chance to do it, right? Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's the other one. 607. I'm sorry. House File 607, the governor's bill. Going to move that up in front of us. No. This goes on. This goes on. A little confusion as to how the quorum works, but we'll have a quorum all day, even if people come and go. So again, we're going to bring House File 607 up before us. And Lynn Osterman would be the first one to testify. Go ahead and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Exit stage left. My name is Lynn Osterman, and I am here in support of the proposed experimental physics and nanotechnology building that would be built at the University of Minnesota Minneapolis campus. I really appreciate the opportunity. As the chairman stated before he had to go, I was hoping to speak to this bill when it was in front of you a couple weeks ago, and so I really appreciate the opportunity to be back before you today. I work with an organization called Minnesota Nano, and we strongly support getting started on this building as soon as possible. In fact, a letter of support from our board, as well as three other, what I would just call additional testimonials, are on the back of the sheet of paper that's being shared with you right now. I know that you've all heard from the advisory board for the University of Minnesota's College of Science and Engineering. In fact, you had all received a letter that looked something like this. It was dated back in February, and it's urging you to break ground as early as this spring on this building. But there are others that are very much in support of this and join us from MinNano, including the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota, Life Science Alley, the Minnesota High Tech Association, as well as the Minnesota Precision Manufacturers Association, and many others. We recognize this project's importance to the business community in three major areas, the first one being workforce. The university is committed to responding to the business community's needs, expanding the undergraduate experience so they can be the ones who take the new jobs that are created by companies in Minnesota. Nanotechnology will be a major job creator, and so Minnesota needs a prepared workforce if we want to capture the anticipated job growth in our state. The Department of Labor predicts a tenfold increase in the number of nano-oriented jobs in just 5 years' time, from 200,000 jobs that were estimated in 2010 to over 2 million jobs as early as 2015. And that's really not that hard to imagine if you think about it, since even something as basic as our cell phones, which leverage nanotechnology, that's why they've gotten smaller and smaller, that just one example has gone from only 4 million users back in 1990 to over 300 million users, and that's just in the U.S. alone. Our second interest is in the research and development portion. If the university doesn't have the capacity to do the work, and Minnesota companies go elsewhere to do their sponsored research, for instance, the eventual development cycle that would likely result from that work together would probably take place elsewhere, as would the commercialization opportunities. So this facility would be a quantum leap in the research capabilities that we would have available for that sponsored research. Advanced materials manipulation abilities would be enhanced dramatically. And Minnesota, you might not know this, but we're already one of the world capitals for matter studies, and this facility would enable that work to expand exponentially. And then thirdly, another area that we're interested in and that we believe that this building would help us with dramatically is the next generation of intellectual property, or yes, intellectual property that can then be licensed from the university. And it doesn't matter where you are in the country or the world, but new IP is the main ingredient to developing and maintaining a robust economy. And this building would allow interdisciplinary collaboration. There are currently over 15 departments at the University of Minnesota that are utilizing nanoscience and nanotechnology to some degree, oftentimes together. But this building would represent a home in which that research could be, that collaborative research could be done together, and that would result in work on projects that today aren't occurring and simply can't occur because of the facilities that we now have. And so lastly, Madam Chair and members, we see this as an economic development tool for our state. There's a bill that's authored by Representative Mahoney here, and one that's authored by Senator Rosen across the street. And we originated in what we would consider more jobs-oriented committees deliberately. We didn't originate that bill within the Higher Ed Committee, for instance, because we really want you to understand that, for at least from our angle, this is an economic development tool. Yes, it happens to be at the University of Minnesota campus, but this would have statewide implications long-term, and it would be a part of a growing and dynamic science and technology ecosystem that many of us have been working on for the last decade in particular, but we also see as vitally important to our state's future economy. In the immediate future, this is shovel-ready. You gave planning dollars that have been utilized since last spring, and we do know that we could go into building mode as early as, well, as apparently when winter really leaves. So we would really appreciate you looking at this, and we encourage you, even if you don't do a bonding bill, to please bond for this project so we can move ahead. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Osterman. Questions for Ms. Osterman by any of the members here? All right. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you again.
Eric Hage, Hagee from Ready for K. There we go. Thank you. We're going to try to hold all of our testimonies to 5 minutes, so if you want to state your name and your title for the record, that would be awesome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eric Hauge. I work for Ready for K. Ready for K is a statewide early childhood advocacy and policy organization. We are so pleased to offer our support for House File 607, which includes $3 million for the Early Childhood Facility Grant Program. While funding for this program comes from capital bonds, it acts really more like a typical state grant program. When funding is available, cities, counties, and school districts may apply to the Department of Human Services for the funding to build or rehabilitate early childhood facilities. Private child care or Head Start programs must partner with the political subdivision to receive the funding. This program builds on and encourages local collaboration and partnerships that we often see at the local level by giving priority to projects that involve collaboration of the programs. More than 60 projects have been funded since the program's inception in 1992. You should have a handout with a map showing the distribution of those projects in your packet. The need for these facilities and for this funding is great. In the last funding cycle, DHS received more than 50 inquiries about the program and nearly $2 million in requests for 7 projects. Of these, only 3 projects were awarded funding. Ready for K conducted a survey of our partners and providers across the state about a year ago about their need for facilities, and we know that there are at least a dozen communities across Minnesota that have projects that could utilize this funding. However, when funding is not available, as has been the case for the past several years, local communities tend to put their plans on hold and on the shelves and make do with what they have despite what the need may be. It's critical that the state take this opportunity to invest in early childhood through facility grant rehab and construction. These facilities help create jobs and meet the growing demand for high-quality early learning experiences, and we hope that if there's a bonding bill that goes forth, this would be one a project for consideration. Thanks, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the testifier? All right, seeing none, thank you, sir. Next, City of Minneapolis Intergovernmental Relations. A representative from there. I'm not sure who's coming forward for that. So. go ahead and state your name and title for the tape, please. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I am Pierre Ouellette with the City of Minneapolis Intergovernmental Relations Department. With me today is Councilmember Elizabeth Glidden from our Intergovernmental Relations Committee, and she will be giving a brief description of the three projects that we were lucky to have included in the governor's bonding bill. And we also have experts on each project here in the audience if there are deeper questions that need to be asked after our brief testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for your time allowing us to speak briefly to our local projects. As Mr. Ouellette said, we're very thankful to have three projects included in the bonding bill. And as well, we are very supportive of the bonding bill as a whole, as it's providing critical construction and building trades jobs in a time when these are some of the most hard-hit industries. Number one, we have, I think, one of the most fundamental types of projects that this bonding money could help, which is an emergency bridge rehabilitation. This is for the Plymouth Avenue Bridge, which is now closed to vehicle traffic. This is a bridge that carries 14,000 trips per day, so it is very utilized, critical critical bridge for the city of Minneapolis going across the Mississippi River. We have provided some perspective on that. Number two is going to a project that we know members of the committee may be somewhat familiar with, which is the Target Center. This is seeking help in the amount of $8 million in state funding for what would be critical first step investments in the Target Center. The Target Center is a facility that is wholly owned and financed by the city of Minneapolis, and yet it also is a facility that provides very important statewide benefits. Analysis has shown that it provides about $100 million in what's quantified as economic impact, that much of which goes to the state in terms of sales tax dollars and income tax receipts. The types of investments that would be made with this bonding request are investments in the basic mechanics of the Target Center, and such as replacing life safety systems, upgrading 20-year-old mechanical and electrical infrastructure, things like elevators, HVAC controls, plumbing and electrical types of components. So really things that are critical to making the Target Center operate properly and keeping it as a vital economic generator for the state and for the region. Finally, we are seeking funding in the amount of $5 million, which is for the Granary Road project. This is a project which is an ongoing project which the state and local government and the private sector have already made investments in, and I guess the catchword for this is really jobs. This is a project that is all about jobs. It is preparing land that is intended for private development, land that is adjacent to the University of Minnesota's investments in their new bioscience labs, and it is has been called the Minnesota Science Park. This is a project which can be phased, which is why you have seen past investments in this project for things like land acquisition and pollution cleanup. And as Mr. Ouellette said, we do have experts from the city if there are more particular questions on any of these projects.
Thank you, Ms. Glidden. Any questions for the testifiers? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I seem to recall that there were two critical bridges in Minneapolis that I thought you were seeking this year. And what you're saying is only one was in the governor's bill, or is my memory not accurate?
Right. We also had the 10th Avenue Bridge in our request list, and but the Plymouth Bridge, which is the one which is closed to traffic right now, is the one which is in the governor's bill.
Representative Hausman, follow up.
I just was out of curiosity. In your mind, was this the most crucial of the two?
Ms. Glidden.
Definitely. The Plymouth Avenue Bridge is definitely the most critical bridge to address right now.
Any other questions for the testifier? Representative Kreisel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. About the Target Center improvements, you're asking for $8 million from the state. How much would the city of Minneapolis be investing?
Ms. Glidden?
We invest annually about $12 million in the Target Center from various sources. So this is an annual investment we make that goes to an ongoing operating needs as well as a capital improvement fund. So I guess I can talk to our staff about how to maybe answer your question more particularly. How would we match this? But we do, as I said, we own this facility. We are paying every single year into the funds that are needed to provide the capital improvements.
Representative Creasel.
Just a quick follow-up. What is the total cost for the renovation, and would the Timberwolves be kicking in any? Just so I get an idea of the scope of the project.
Right, and I may need some assistance on this. I do not believe that this is the type of project that the Timberwolves are required to pay part of. There are different responsibilities for the building, which is managed by an outside entity. There are things under the contract for the building, which the city has the responsibility for, and these type of capital upgrades, I believe, are the things that fall under the city's responsibility.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. Oh, excuse me. Representative Clark.
Thank you. Just regarding that last question, can you tell me what the criteria are to determine whether or not a professional team has those responsibilities or not?
Well, I think this is under what's sort of the contract for the building. As you know, this is a building that has a long contract with how the relationship with the team was set up, and the transfer to the city happened before I was on the city council, so there may be some specifics there I just don't understand. Here's Jeff Johnson, who oversees that facility.
Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Can you please identify yourself for the
committee? Sure. Jeff Johnson, City of Minneapolis. I'm the executive director of the Convention Center in Minneapolis, but also oversee the contract that the city has as the owner of the Target Center. I can speak to that. As far as what we are asking for here, we are asking for, again, general infrastructure of the building, which we own, which is all of our responsibility as far as what goes on at the Target Center. So the responsibility of the Timberwolves and the other entities that are within the Target Center are not part of the general infrastructure of the building. So these are things, as Councilmember Glidden said, elevators, escalators, life safety, things that you would need to have operating just to keep the doors open of the Target Center.
All right, thank you. Representative Clark?
Well, I was just wondering at what point we determined that a team doesn't have responsibility for infrastructure of a building that they use.
I guess maybe to go to the heart of your question, I think this is how the how the deal is struck in the beginning, perhaps. What is the, if whether a team has ownership in the building, what is the arrangement for that? At this point, you know, we took over a deal, I guess you might say, and while we have negotiated a contract that has to do with the entity that is now managing the Target Center, that's a different relationship than we're able to negotiate with the team, which had, I think, a 30-year ability to be in the building and responsibility to be in the building.
Representative Clark, follow-up?
That's enough for now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for the testifiers? All right. Thank you for your testimony. Members of the committee, I'd like to move the DE 9 amendment, did you say? The DE 1 amendment pursuant to file House File 960. Any discussion? Members of the committee, I'd like to move House File 960 first. And then to get it in the shape that some of the agencies requested, we're going to add the DE1 amendment. Discussion. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The motion is to move 960 where?
We're just going to be laying it on the table.
Just laying it on the table for now.
Are there questions or discussion? Okay. All of those in favor of the DE1 amendment, Please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Nay. Motion prevails. All right, we're going to start testimony on this bill. First of all, we have Rick Larkin from the city of St. Paul. Is Mr. Larkin in the audience? Okay, here he comes. Welcome, Mr. Larkin. Please state your name and title for the record and pursue with your testimony.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Rick Larkin. I'm the Director of Emergency Management for the City of St. Paul here in the Capital City, and I appreciate the opportunity to be added to the testimony list. My testimony is very simple and straightforward. We at the City of St. Paul are engaged in a flood fight currently, as are our fellow citizens in the Red River Valley. We really just are asking for some consideration that as the committee moves this bill, that the City of St. Paul and other areas of the state would be eligible under the DNR's flood hazard mitigation program. And we just honestly don't know the damages we're going to see. We've been told that this very well could be a record event in the City of St. Paul, and we just want the opportunity to participate in the flood hazard mitigation program as well as the other areas of the state.
Questions for Mr. Larkin? Anyone? Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for the addition.
Okay, Ron Harnick. Please come forward and state your name and your title, and go ahead and proceed with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Ron Harnick. I'm Project Coordinator for the Red River Watershed Management Board in the Red River Valley, and I would like to pass the beginning testimony off to the Chair of our board, John Finney.
Thank you, Ron. Finney. Madam Chair and members, my name is John Finney. I'm a member of the Board of Watershed Managers of the Joy River Watershed District. And I'd like to begin my testimony by thanking you for the opportunity to address this committee concerning the ongoing efforts of the Red River Valley to reduce the damages caused by frequent flooding. I am a farmer from Kitson County, and I'm here today to represent the Red River Watershed Management Board. We are an eight-member joint powers board established by the Minnesota Legislature in 1976. Our membership includes watershed districts from the Bois des Sioux near Lake Traverse on the south to the south end of the basin to the Rosa River, which discharges into the Red River of the North in Manitoba. In the over 35 years of existence, the Red River Watershed Management Board has contributed to the construction of 44 retention projects in the Minnesota tributaries of the Red River, which are able to hold 167,000 acre-feet of floodwater for release after the peak flood flows have subsided. The majority of these projects not only provide local flood relief from road and bridge washouts, from home and business damage, farmland erosion, and overland flooding, but also serve to reduce the peak flows on the main stem of the Red River. In addition, the building of these retention structures also aid in the establishment of new environmental enhancements such as fish and wildlife habitat, improvement in water quality, and low flow stream augmentation. The Red River Watershed Management Board has also assisted in the building of nearly 350 farmstead ring dikes. And these levees enable families to protect their property from the flood and maintain normal lives without the worry of catastrophic damages. All of these activities, of course, have not come to fruition without a few obstacles along the way. In the late 80s and early 90s, the ability to design and build these aforementioned retention projects nearly ground to a halt. It was impossible to get the required permits from state and federal agencies to move forward. As a result of this impasse, the Minnesota Legislature ordered that mediation take place between all parties involved as well as the environmental community. The resulting mediation agreement, signed in 1998, has become the guiding principle for all flood damage reduction projects in the Red River Valley. The agreement uses a bottom-up project team approach to each individual project. Each project is then reviewed by the Flood Damage Reduction Working Group. This group has membership from all parties involved with the mediation process. Since its inception, the mediation agreement has offered a nearly seamless transition from grassroots ideas to completed projects. The Red Board is also involved in the latest methodology for the establishment of new projects. We were the first local government unit to partner with the International Water Institute in its endeavors to create LIDAR mapping of the entire U.S. portion of the Red River Basin. The intricate maps produced by this effort have enabled the designers of flood damage projects, reduction projects, to determine the best possible location for any new structures. The board has also contributed funding and technical expertise for the establishment of a new computer-generated flow model, the Mike 11. This model can not only determine flows on the main stem of the river, but is able to establish the flow contributions from each tributary as well. By using this new information and established criteria, each watershed district will have the knowledge to be able to reduce their flood flow contributions to the Red River to reach the Red River Watershed Management Board's goal of a 20% reduction in peak flood flows at the international boundary. And I will tell you, that's 4 miles from my home, and I would certainly like to see that. With that said, we ask that you continue your support for our ongoing flood damage reductions, and I would gladly answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Finney. Questions for Mr. Finney? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if it's Mr. Harnack or later Kent Lacosmo can answer this, but as you recall, last year Representative Eakin was speaking on behalf of some of the downstream cities that are growing increasingly anxious and wonder about the work around the Fargo-Moorhead area and what is the impact. And we put language into the bill that was intended as somewhat comfort language, and I don't see anything like that this year, and I don't know whether Mr. Harnack or Mr. Lacosmo might be able to help me with that.
Mr. Harnack?
Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, I believe that would be an appropriate question to ask when the City of Moorhead comes to the table, because they've been more actively involved in the specifics of that. That said, there continues to be concern upstream and downstream regarding the impacts associated with the Fargo-Moorhead project, and I think there is a strong partnership of trying to work to minimize those as much as practical with upstream storage efforts. But the specific status of that, I would ask that you bring that up with when the City of Moorhead and the Buffalo Red Watershed District comes to the table.
And Madam Chair, if I could just follow up, one of the reasons for raising it with Mr. Harnack, because I know you were present when we were negotiating some of that language, I'm not altogether sure that the Moorhead folk would have been there, so I'm not certain that they would have an understanding of the purpose of that language.
Yes.
So at any rate, it's just an issue, and I'm laying it out for whoever's coming up who can help me with that.
And Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, for the benefit of those that weren't here, the language was put in that the dollars could not be spent for the flood diversion until those impacts were addressed, is the way the language was stated in the previous bonding bill.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, Mr. Finney, I'd like to give you a little congratulations. I've been here for a few months, so I'm new, and we've had some people from Kitson County come down to testify in other areas, but I have to say that you cannot get very much further from the Capitol living where you live, about 4 miles to the Canadian border and the North Dakota border. Thank you for being here. I appreciate that. Just for the information of the committee, could you explain to them maybe what LIDAR is so they have an idea? You talked about that during your testimony, please.
I will, Representative Fabian, Madam Chair. The LIDAR is a highly technical survey done by a combination of global positioning satellites and precision flyovers of the area in question, the Red River Basin. Basically, what it does is, at the certain times of the year, and it has the area must be free of foliage, free of snow, free of floodwaters. The area is flown over with radar used so that you get precision mapping of all areas that you fly over. It's done in grids. It was done, I believe, in 8 different grids from south to north. It's if you can see the results of it, it's pretty amazing stuff. In fact, it is on the website of the International Water Institute, if anyone is interested in carrying on with that.
Representative Fabian?
And then just one follow-up. You know, I grew up in the Fargo Moorhead area. I've been fighting floods since 1965, I believe, is the first one that I remember fighting, and have been through a lot of them up in the Roseau area as well. Could you give us just a little bit of a historical perspective on how flood mitigation has changed over the years? Back in the early 70s and so forth, it was just stack up some sandbags and hope for the best, and nowadays it's a lot different, is it not?
Mr. Finney?
Thank you, Representative Fabian, Madam Chair. Yes, and as my testimony has perhaps spoken to this issue about the technical things that we are involved with now, we are able to pinpoint the best possible locations for the projects to be built at. In other words, the best bang for the buck, where we can get the most benefit for the money spent for these kinds of things. However, I will not take away from the organizers of our management board in the mid-70s. They were some very far-reaching and far-thinking people, realizing that there was a flooding problem in the Red River Basin and that we needed to gather together from south to north and even further up into Lake Winnipeg to try and solve these problems, because they were not going to go away. So it's been kind of a great evolution and kind of something that's been, other than the fact that the flood's been kind of fun to see.
Other questions, members? Representative Hackbarth, did you have a question? Oh, I thought you had him on his list. Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, to the issue of LIDAR, we should acknowledge that in the legacy bill last year, or 2 years ago, with Representative Hansen as the leader on that, we funded that, and the point is, once that is done, all of the flood money is better spent when we have that information. And there is even a little bit of history from southern Minnesota that might be helpful for the committee to be aware of, from that Representative Hansen could share as to the timing of that flood and the response that LIDAR.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hausman. And I think Representative Drazkowski is aware of this, that after the 2007 flood, the designated disaster area was flown there for LIDAR as well. And there are still some sections of the state that are not covered with the appropriation from the Clean Water Fund, so I believe there's going to be another request to finish the state. The valley being done, southeast being done, I think the Minnesota River has been flowing, and then some of the intervening areas need to be completed yet, so we have that data statewide.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen, Representative Hansen. Any other questions for the testifiers? Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate you being here today.
Madam Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Fabian?
Madam Chair, I'm going to continue.
Representative Warnock, fine.
If I might.
Representative?
I want to just add to the LIDAR. We have the ability to more than pay for the cost of that LIDAR, because many of our projects, in terms of planning and design, most of that can get done without the detailed surveys that we used to have to do. The Red River Valley being as flat as it is, 5-foot topography that we had on maps previously just did no good for us whatsoever. And now we're down to less than 6 inches that can be measured with that LIDAR, which gets us a long ways, you know, in the process. I really want to thank the committee for hearing this flood stuff at this time, for two reasons. One is today, when all our watershed districts across the state are in town for their legislative day. And if we were to wait another week, we wouldn't be able to have most of them here to be able to speak to their individual projects, because they'd be back home fighting floods. And so we think this is really timely. It's important. And in the end, we would really like to see this flood bonding bill move forward aggressively. We feel that if it can get through the system without waiting until the final negotiated process, there can be significant efficiencies in the expenditure of state dollars. We'd be able to integrate our emergency measures with the permanent measures more readily. We would be able to begin projects as soon as the water goes down, rather than waiting till June or July. So I know you've got many things on your table, but we really feel that it would be important and really a significant effort on the part of the state to move the flood bonding bill stuff forward sooner than later.
Mr. Harnack, I believe Representative Hansen has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Harnack, we've had these discussions before, but I want to ask you rather than asking each of the watershed districts, that the watershed districts are the drainage authorities in most cases in the valley. And I think previously we've asked, you know, as the flood issue comes back again and again and again, how have there been approvals for new drainage or drainage cleanouts in the affected areas? And I think, has there been any monitoring of that just in terms of with the drainage authorities, if that's been happening?
Mr. Harnack.
Madam Chair and Representative, there are some improvements that are continuing to take place. More likely than not, they're associated with our flood control projects. To be able to bring that drainage water more efficiently into our impoundments, to be able to hold it and store it, and then gradually release it rather than just adding to the problems downstream. We also have had significant discussions about the long-term impacts of pattern tiling in the Red River Valley. We feel one of the most significant land use changes that will take place over the next 10 years is pattern tiling, because it will create more uniform soil moisture, be able to get into the fields earlier and be able to get your crops out without them standing in water and leaving them over the winter. One of our watershed districts, the Bois de Sioux Watershed District in the southern part of the basin, has been asked by the counties to actually regulate drainage, and they have implemented such a program. And so I would say in my experience that we are not having just independent improvements take place that are just passing the water on to the next guy downstream.
Representative Hansen? Mr. Harnack, I would like to ask you now if you'd want to invite up some of the members of the watershed districts that are here to testify.
Madam Chair, you have in front of you a handout that said Red River Watershed Management Board, and what I'd like to do is to call each one of our watershed district folks up to give a brief overview of their specific project. And first is Dan Money from the Two Rivers Watershed District.
Mr. Money, please state your name for the record, and we're going to give each representative from watershed districts 2 to 3 minutes. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hey, my name is Dan Money. I'm with the Two Rivers Watershed District. It's located in Kitson and Roseau counties and part of Marshall County as well. Our office is in Hallock, Minnesota, so I'm not too far south of John Finney. The first project, and I believe you have a handout of this, it's called the Springbrook Flood Protection Project. This might be a good one to start with because it gets to a couple of the issues that you just discussed. This is a project that began about 13 years ago as a legal ditch petition. The landowners along this coulee are experiencing breakout flooding. The channel itself within the coulee is rather small. It's been impacted. It's intensively agriculture on either sides of it. It's got sedimentation issues, and the water, as the channel becomes sedimented in, the water breaks out, and it impacts many acres of farmland. Also impacts infrastructure, roads, culverts, those types of things. And the third thing, this ditch or this waterway serves as an outlet for the city of Carlstead. They discharge both their sanitary and their storm sewers to this, so it's a very important channel. And as the landowners came in and petitioned, we started going through the ditch process. Appointed engineer looked at what they wanted to do. The original was to clean it out, make a better looking, historically looking ditch out of it. This is a DNR protected water course as well, so there's another layer of things in there. It became very early on looked like, well, you can't just do a regular ditch project here. It was redesigned a couple of different times, and we came back with the idea of restore the erosion that's going on, take care of the side sloughing, take care of the down cutting. And then the other thing is, instead of digging it deeper or straighter, we decided that setback levees would be a part of this. And a setback levee is either side of the channel then, and it varies where you are in this 9-mile stretch, but anywhere from 100 feet to, I believe, 300 feet setback levees. And those are designed, when the water comes up and out of the channel, It keeps the water in between those levees, prevents it from breaking out over land and doing the impacts that it is doing. Another thing that happened within this last 13 years is that the expenses of that to bear as a regular legal ditch project were rather large to the local landowners, and the NRCS, Federal Natural Resource Conservation Service, came in with a program called PL-566. And 2 weeks ago we signed an agreement with them. They're going to provide $850,000 at this point, and so we're looking for an additional $130,000 from the state. We can leverage that federal money, and hopefully this project will go. We're looking at this year, then we can finish up the land acquisition part of this, get our permits both from DNR and from U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
About 30 seconds, sir.
Yep, and then the final thing is to do the final engineering and plans and specs, and we will be using LIDAR to design these setback levees. So.
Thank you, Mr. Money. Any questions for Mr. Money? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Money, is there any landowner commitment here? It started as a ditch project. Is there any assessment of beyond the purchase of the land, but is there landowners benefiting within the confined watershed that this affects? Are they paying any assessment to the
yes,
project?
Mr. Money. We will continue it as a legal ditch in the end. It's not your regular-looking legal ditch. But with that, we will obtain the land as an easement, and that will include the setback levees and the area in between them. So it will be a ditch levee. And part of it also has been funded through the RIM program. We're trying to use RIM as a part of that to help out as well.
Thank you, Mr. Money. Let's have your next testifier, Mr. Hart.
Yes, I'd like to call up Rob Sando with the Roseau River Watershed District to talk about a project that is already going on, and this remaining funding will finish this project this summer.
Mr. Sando, welcome to the committee, and please state your name and title for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Rob Sando. I'm the administrator for the Roseau River Watershed District in Roseau. It encompasses Roseau, Lake of the Woods, Beltrami, Marshall, and Kitson counties. Here today to talk about the Hay Creek Project. The Hay Creek Project is located northeast from the city of Roseau in Roseau County. The area that the project covers includes the lower portion of the Hay Creek watershed and adjacent 37 square mile Norland subbasin. Hay Creek drains into the Roseau River immediately downstream from the city of Roseau. The project has three features or phases: a 7 mile corridor restoration and floodway, a 3,000 acre off channel or retention impoundment site, and a connection channel. The site will provide a total of at least 9,500 acre feet of gated and ungated storage. We have the project divided into three phases. Of the first three that I listed, the second one is ongoing as we speak, which would be the impoundment retention site. Phase one, the corridor, and phase three, the connection channel, are currently done. Phase two is ongoing, and as I said, as we speak right now, the contractor is working in the field. This project has been a good project for the Roseau River Watershed District. On the east end of the impoundment site in the southeast corner, we avoided a fen after discussing this with the Corps of Engineers, and we actually moved the impoundment line over to avoid that fen. The outlets and inlet structures are currently in place, but yet not operational, and we anticipate the completion of this project either this year or next year. And I'm here to answer any questions.
Any questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have the same question on the local landowner compliment.
Mr. Sando.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen. We have fee title on all the properties within the impoundment and along the corridor. And this will provide immediate, at least 10-year relief to the landowners along the corridor and in and around surrounding the impoundment area and connection channel.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are the surrounding landowners surrounding the impoundment, are they being assessed anything for the project?
No.
Mr. Sando. Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, no.
Just to comment on that, Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, the Watershed District and the Red River Watershed Management Board do have a 2 mil levy that goes across the district where everybody's paying into it, and we use those resources as part of the project costs that
that are paid by the local side of this and match the state and federal dollars.
Other questions?
Just, Madam Chair, just to that point, I'm familiar with the project, obviously. It's north and east of Roseau. And thanks, Rob, for coming down. It's out in a very, very rural area. The nearest home to this, Rob, is how far?
Representative Fabian, it would approximately be about a half a mile west of the outlet.
And there's a substantial amount of state land in the area as well, right?
Correct. Currently, the Roseau River Watershed District has about 40% of the watershed is publicly owned. And that, where the impoundment site is located, is right adjacent to or on the south side of the Lost River State Forest.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Sandel. Mr. Harnack, who do you have next?
Madam Chair, just one last thing on this project is that Norland Impoundment is a wetland. But in this neck of the woods, there's been a tremendous amount of historic reed canary grass harvesting. And it is our plan through management of this to try to convert it back to natural wetland habitat and manage it for that purpose in conjunction with the flood control project.
All right. Thank you.
I would like to call up next Nick Dries, who's administrator of the Middle Snake Tamarack Watershed District, to talk a bit about Brant Angus impoundment.
All right. Mr. Dries, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Thank you. My name is Nick Dries, administrator at the Middle Snake Tamarack River Watershed District in northwest Minnesota, mainly in Marshall County. The Brant Angus project is a flood control project. It's a section and a half of property. It drains about 20 square miles into it. There are 7 miles of coulee rehabilitation planned for the project, as well as this maintenance on the outlets. This project is one of the first, I believe, that we are trying to get additional cost share for the DNR. Last year, I believe the legislation allowed for these flood damage reduction grants to be, rather than 50-50 cost share, to up to 75% state. Through the technical people, and with the help of the DNR, we've come up with a formula that brings this project to a 65-35 cost share. That's substantial to the local districts to have the cost shares reduced. These projects are big burdens on the local watersheds. The local share is kind of prohibitive to most districts. We cannot build project after project with the local input. We have been fortunate in Middle Snake Tamarack to successfully complete projects every couple of years, but those also had additional higher, state or federal contributions. Along with the coulee rehabilitation, there will be an augmentation pool to assist in the release of waters. There are a series of projects kind of stacked on each top of each other along the glacial ridge, and we need to control all the waters that are released. There's concerns at the outlets that if all these impoundments are released at the same time, we're not really solving the problem. We're just transporting it downstream. And if I could address Representative Hansen's concerns about the drainage issues, the Middle Snake Tamarack is all their drainage problems outside of where we are legally bound to repair ditches. The board is set where we will not just transfer the water problem downstream. We'll try to establish some kind of retention upstream along with channel excavation or rehabilitation. We feel it does not solve the problem by passing it down to the next door neighbor.
Mr. Dries, have you completed your testimony? Do you have more?
I'm ready for if any questions.
Any other questions?
The project is ready. Project ready. The permits have been applied for. Land has been acquisition is complete for the embalmment. The engineering drawings are completed. We are ready to construct this construction season.
All right. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Dries, the committee received a letter from a citizen up in the Northwest, and I don't know if you have a copy of that, and it's a fairly long letter, and I would just ask if you could take a look at it, maybe get back to the committee later on, maybe answering some of those concerns. But I wanted you to know that we all had received a copy of a letter, and follow-up later would be fine.
Madam Chair, I'll get that copy, and we'll get information back to the committee.
Fantastic. All right, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Dries. Who do we have next?
Madam Chair, I'd like to call on Myron Jesme, the administrator for the Red Lake Watershed District. This is a project that's not ready to go. It is ready to go this summer. However, it's a multi-purpose project, and I'd like Myron to kind of speak to where we've been on it and some of the challenges that we've had in moving this project forward.
Mr. Jesme, please identify yourself with the tape, please.
Madam Chair, I'm Myron Jesme, Red Lake Watershed District Administrator. Our office is located in Thief River Falls. We are the largest watershed district in Minnesota, almost 6,000 square miles. We are parts of 10 counties. And what project we're talking about today is the Grand Marais Creek project, which was initially part of the Governor's Clean Water Initiative, a pilot project back in 2004 and 5. It was part of two impoundments, flood damage reduction sites that were constructed in 2006 and 7. And as part of that project, we also, address some of Representative Hansen's concerns, is downstream. There's also some downstream components to this project. We have since applied to the Lisard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council for funding for this project. Last year, we actually got a hearing. Mr. Hansen was on that committee and actually supported the project. What we were asked to do back at that time was to go back to Clean Water Legacy, because part of the funding mechanism in place was for clean water. We did that. We received $632,000. We took the request of Lisard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council and did that. And now we're back today to address the component that still is flood damage reduction and part of the Lisard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council goals, is what we feel. So today we're asking for 23% of the funding from the state of Minnesota through the flood damage reduction effort. We're going to back to the Lisard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council and ask for 50% of the remaining project cost, with the remaining 27% being supported by the local tax base, so to speak.
Fantastic. Any questions? Representative Hausman, I don't know who had their hand up first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. When I hear you have to go to the different organizations we've created here, I'm just struck by how we have made life very complicated. And it perhaps is one of those arguments for having a one-stop shop as a little easier way to go, and to coordinate those dollars perhaps a bit more.
Mr. Desmay, your response?
Representative Hausman, I appreciate your concerns, because, yes, it is getting rather difficult. It's a learning process for all of us to understand all these intergovernmental entities and how to work together and to try and get the projects to flow as smooth as possible. And we hope we're doing that. And I think this last step that we are trying to pursue now through Lisard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council and the flood damage reduction efforts and our local tax base will come to some conclusion on this project, which started back in the late 90s. And this is the last phase of this project for the Grand Marais. It's a huge area just north of East Grand Forks and south of Oslo, Minnesota. So it's a large area of our watershed district that we're taking care of the flood damage reduction components.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would agree this is a good project. I think that it also shows there's multiple benefits to some of these projects. And if I remember correctly, you didn't even get a hearing the first year. Is that
right? That's correct.
And you did get a hearing, but did not make the final approval, even though I was advocating for it.
Mr. Jesme.
That is correct.
That might have been the problem.
No, actually, I found it rather interesting, because Representative Hansen supported the project, and then we had Senator Ingebrigtsen also supported the project. So we had, you know, across the table support. We just didn't have enough of it.
Very good. Representative Droskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, as I read through this, and I've been trying to listen, I apologize, it's getting late in the afternoon, and we're trying to be as sharp as we can here, but it looks like it's more of kind of an environmental enhancement project rather than a flood control project. Is that accurate?
This portion is. I'm not going to make any bones about it. And that's why we had our engineers separate the flood damage reduction component of the project versus the environmental concerns, because as you note, we're only asking for 23% of the total project cost from the flood damage reduction, and that's the component that we feel is for flood damage reduction, and that's making the water stay within the channel, not letting it leave the channel, and some of the measures that has to occur with that part of the project will be the flood damage reduction component of the project. So you are correct.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the flood reduction management, all that has been completed. You're good to go in terms of floods there. Is that
Jasmine.
Right?
We're good to go with the local flooding in that area, not the flooding that occurs in the Red River of the North.
Yeah, comprende.
Big difference, because this is the last place where the water enters the Red River of the North is at this location.
Yep.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, sir. I that's exactly what I meant.
Any further questions?
Just in, Madam Chair, on that project, we are restoring a natural channel that was cut off originally. And we, the flood part of this is putting a control structure in place so that we can divert the low flows through the natural channel, backs up some of the water, but then the extreme flood flows still flow over the top of that and then go in into the red. So its major portion, as was indicated, is natural resource enhancement, but there is a small component, if we're going to complete this, that's flood control. We can't do one without the other and be efficient and effective with expending the state dollars.
Thank you. I think Mr. Jesme had one final comment.
I do. I have, and I would like to also stress that the land acquisition, we've had various landowner meetings. We've the RIM acquisition is taking place right now on upwards of 400 acres, taking it out of the low flood areas and putting that in back into habitat restoration, and with full support of landowners in this area.
Thank you. All right. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Fabian has a question.
Madam Chair, to Representative Drazkowski's point, if you look at the little photo in the top right-hand corner, maybe Mr. Harnack or Mr. Jesme want to explain that, the red line and the blue line on there, because it really spells out the project.
Mr. Jesme.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The magenta, the horizontal magenta line, is actually what we refer to as the cut channel. That is the one thing that the Lesage-Sams Council had a very difficult time funding. It was more of a erosion. At this area, 700 tons of sediment enters the Red River of the North at this location. By restoring the channel back to its original habitat, it'll thus reduce the erosion that occurs in this cut channel. So the $662,000 that we received through the Clean Water Legacy Funding will help stabilize that cut channel. The restoration of the 6 miles of channel that Mr. Harnack referred to earlier as being cut off will help alleviate the concerns of the erosion that occurs in that area.
Thank you, Mr. Jesme. Any further questions or comments? All right. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
The next, Madam Chair, the next two projects, John Rochline from the Boys of Sioux Watershed District didn't leave yesterday, so he's stuck at home in the storm, so I'm going to just speak briefly to these two projects. The Red Path project is a 16,000 acre foot storage project that encompasses about 2,100 acres. And this project will have significant flood control benefits downstream, as it will have significant habitat benefits. We are designing into this pools. Pool 1 will be a northern pike spawning area. Pool 2, 3, and 4 will be managed for waterfowl and shorebirds. And pool 5 will actually be maintained in agricultural productivity, but will be flooded when we need it for flood storage. The benefit of doing some of this agricultural productivity within the context of our pool, maintaining projects like this are not cheap. And what we do is lease out that to farmers who will then farm within it, with the understanding that we can flood it under certain circumstances, And then that investment of lease money goes into the long-term maintenance of these projects. This project itself will have a significant effect in virtually eliminating downstream flooding to roads, bridges, culverts, and will also have a significant impact because of the amount of storage on Breckenridge and Fargo-Moorhead area. We've got our acquisition done. This project is ready to go. We expect it to be about a four-year construction project because of the size of it. We have eliminated one environmental enhancement component of it from the flood control side of it. And you see the little squiggly lines on the north side of this project. And that was to take a channel that the Corps of Engineers straightened in 1955 and restore that to the sinuosity to that and tie it back into the part of the Mustinka River that was cut off. We are asking the LaSard Council and we're asking the Clean Water Legacy Council to fund that portion of the environmental enhancements. Without that, those environmental enhancements will not be done. We will just have the flood control components and our management objectives for the pool areas itself for the habitat enhancements. The next project is the North Ottawa project. Some of you that have been on our bonding tours previously have been to this project. The flood control aspects of this project are done. And last year we stored a lot of water in it. This year we're able to store even more to the benefit of the downstream areas, benefit of Breckenridge, Fargo-Moorhead area as well. The last portion of this project that's left to be done is strictly environmental enhancement. And it would create in these pool areas more divisions, which will be managed in cooperation with the DNR Wildlife and the Fish and Wildlife Service to create moist soil habitat opportunities, shorebird migration benefits. And you can see from the photo here, this was taken last spring when we had the pools full of the migratory waterfowl that are using these areas. This has been designated as a wildlife refuge in support of everybody, which has been problematic when we went to the LaSard Sam's Council for funding for this environmental portion of it. Because they said, if you cannot hunt on it, we're not going to give you any money. We can use it for other kind of public use by viewing and everything else. And this project, this North Ottawa project, is about 7.5 miles south of the Red Path project. These two projects in conjunction with each other will do more for habitat for the future of this area than anything that we've done in the past. And it's unfortunate that we can't kind of convince some of these processes to acknowledge more of that and to be supportive of it.
Questions for Mr. Harnack on these two projects? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Harnack, the first one of these remaining was a Red Path one. Did I hear, Craig, is a flood control portion complete there as well?
Madam Chair, Representative, no. We are in the process of acquiring. We've got all but pool number 5 acquired. Okay. We are ready to let bids for construction. We're just waiting to get the bonding money in the queue so we can move forward.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Harnack. I was impressed by the approach to Pool 5, and it makes a lot of sense. I'm really wondering here, members, as we look at this, several of these, it appears that there has been attempts to go through the LaSard Outdoor Heritage Council and legacy funds. I don't know if you talked to CCMR, Mr. Harnack, but we do have millions of dollars each year that are allocated in these areas, and if these projects need to be completed and they have environmental components, you know, I would think there are some ways, hopefully, that we can continue to have those discussions down the road and utilize those dedicated funds rather than continuing to put our state taxpayers in debt and maybe save those bonding dollars for flood-related projects and things that don't qualify in those areas. Just my comments, members. Thanks.
Mr. Harnack, just finishing comments, if you could.
Madam Chair, I've got two more to come up.
Okay.
If you might. I have Jerry Bentz, who's the with Houston Engineering. He's the engineer for the Wild Rice Watershed District to talk about Purley, Hendrum, Shelley, Felton, Climax, and Neillsville quickly. It's three small community projects that two are moving forward, and four we hope to have money to finish up in the next 2 years.
Mr. Bentz, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Jerry Bentz, Houston Engineering. I serve as the watershed engineer for the Wild Rice Watershed, also here representing the Sandhill Watershed District on their projects. Following the 2009 flood, record flood in the Red River Valley, both watershed districts actively engaged the six communities directly downstream of the Fargo-Moorhead area to address flood needs that became evident and obvious during the 2009 event. Since that time, with assistance from the state flood hazard mitigation program, we were able to receive some seed money to do essentially conceptual planning in those communities. We've arrived at projects in all six of the communities that the communities support, as well as the surrounding property owners. As Ron mentioned, two of those will be starting this spring once the flood ends for this year. One of the issues, and I guess the main issue that we're here to testify on behalf of this time, isn't really the funding that we've received. It's the level of protection that's being afforded to the communities. The state has been very generous in assisting the communities with providing the protection. However, that protection has been limited to 1 foot above the 100-year floodplain. There's a cap at 2% of the median household income for those communities, very small communities, that funds the 1 foot above the 100-year. We don't feel that that's a suitable level of protection. Corps of Engineers projects, communities, typically we do protection to 100-year plus 3 feet. Just as an example right now, we're doing a lot of work with the Fargo-Moorhead areas. I'm sure Mayor Voxen will testify to in a few moments. Excuse me, for this year's flood, we're protecting to 44 feet in the Fargo-Moorhead area. That's essentially 3 foot above what the National Weather Service is calling a 30% chance flood. So the Weather Service predicts to go to 41. We're building 3 foot higher than that to have extra protection for wave action. And in the event that they're wrong and it actually turns out to be a couple of feet higher, with the level of protection that's being afforded to these downstream small communities, 100-year plus 1 foot. Just as an example, in the city of Purley, if we build to 100-year plus 1 foot this year, we will really only have protection to 3 foot above what the National Weather Service gives a 98% chance of occurring this year. So I guess the significance in that is if we go out, build these projects, spend the millions of dollars to build to 100-year plus 1 foot, and had we completed the project in Purley last year, we most likely would be back this year adding additional emergency measures on top of it, because 100-year plus 1 foot just isn't enough. As another way of looking at it, even the ring dike program that the state has been very generous to in the past since the 97 flood, those ring dikes for farmsteads themselves, we build to 100-year plus 2 foot, or flood record plus 2 foot. So we're just here in support on behalf of the six communities, the two watershed districts that support the amendment to cap the local share at 2% and provide 100-year plus 3 foot minimum protection.
Thank you, Mr. Bentz. Questions for Mr. Bentz? All right. Thank you for your testimony.
And Madam Chair, we have one last one, which is Kevin Rood, who's the administrator for the Wild Rice Watershed District. And this deals with the last two pages in my handout. And on one of those, we had commitments from the state and from FEMA. Letters went out, notices in the paper that they were going to fund acquisitions of properties that were significantly flooded. And then we found out later on that they were not going to. And so what we're asking for this go around for those few projects is that the state pick up to 100% of those costs minus what they were paid in flood insurance, because we feel those landowners now have made decisions that they can't go back on, you know, and there was a commitment from the public to pick up those costs, and now those aren't there, and we feel that that's a commitment that really the state should handle.
Mr. Rude, please state your name for the record.
My name is Kevin Rude. I'm currently the Wild Rice Watershed Administrator. My recently retired job, I was the County Emergency Manager for Norman County for the last 18 years. So I've been fighting these floods for a long time. And these people have been doing it too. And we're talking older people here that have struggled for years with this battle, and they had their hopes built up, and then they were bashed. It's an unfortunate thing that it happened, and I'm hoping that you can help us out. We also have people that have asked for ring dikes, the last page, and due to the location of their property next to the river, the ground is not stable enough to handle a ring dike. And what we would like to do in these situations is to actually buy out their houses from there, which will then allow them to build on a different portion of their parcel, and then we would be able to give them a ring dike, and that way we can keep people living in the county and in our watershed. And that's all I got.
All right. Questions for Mr. Rude?
So, Madam Chair, just in wrap up, the delete all amendment addresses all the issues that we've raised. It addresses the 2% issue. It's in the first paragraph of the delete all amendment. It said we will build to the state standard of 3 feet above the 100-year flood, and that's what the 2% will apply to. That doesn't mean that these communities will be able to be removed from the floodplain, because there are many other issues, such as accessibility and other things, that they would have to get exceptions from FEMA for to actually be removed from the floodplain. But at least we will not have to go in, add additional heights to the levee in an emergency setting in a repetitive fashion. We should pay for that all at one time and save the state long-term dollars in this repetitive emergency tear down, emergency tear down, like we've seen in many instances in the past. The $55 million that's in this bill, we think, is an absolute minimum to address the significant flood needs of this state. If we can maintain that degree of funding for this kind of special bonding year and do it again next year, we believe that every community in the Red River Valley will be able to be provided with that 3 feet above the 100-year flood protection, in addition to completing the projects that you see on the table for our retention projects. Then our future will focus strictly on retention, of not just looking at the individual construction for one community or another, but to really look at it at a basin-wide basis to achieve a broad retention on the Minnesota and North Dakota side so that we can reduce the flood stages on the main stem by 1 to 2+ feet all the way from the south to the north. And because the Red River flows north, which is the only one that does, and it's a difficult flooding transition, because it melts in the south, it's still frozen in the north, and the water just kind of stacks up. So I want to thank, you know, Representative Fabian for his interest in this. All the bills that the Red River legislators have introduced are consolidated in this one bill. So I really thank.
Representative Hausman has a question.
To Mr. Rude, and it may have been, you may have misstated, but we sort of have to now speak on behalf of all the other taxpayers in the state. I mean, it is all the taxpayers in the state who are helping with this. And they're not always sympathetic when we read the letters to the editor. And so I have to at least ask a clarification about one thing. It sounded as though you were saying where those that change of heart had happened, and I'm not sure that the relocation didn't happen. You ended that by saying that this will enable us to keep the population in our county, and I think that would be an argument for your county. I don't know that it would be an argument for the rest of the state, the rest of the taxpayers. So. I'll give you an opportunity to give us a different context for that.
Mr. Rood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hausman, my answer to that is the people that are having the problems are right on the Red River. If we buy them out completely, to be quite honest, it's a lot cheaper to move across the river, if you want to be blunt. And I will, do my darndest to keep them in our state as long as I can. We've seen this before with the buyouts, that if you don't give them an incentive to stay, it's real easy to leave. I don't know if that answers your question, ma'am, but it's the best I can do.
Thank you, Mr. Rood. Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, maybe to follow up on that, We're bonding for a public purpose, and all of us may have different definitions of what a public purpose is. If the public purpose is to retain the population, that may be a valuable goal. There may be other communities that come before us that are wanting to protect public infrastructure, or to protect public property, or to protect life and safety, health and safety. And that's the conundrum we're in, where if we have to invest scarce public dollars or incur, as Representative Drazkowski said, incur public debt, we have to be able to sort out which is the higher priority. And I think that most citizens are going to probably go with the protect public health and safety first as a reaction or a response to try to protect the public infrastructure, maybe second. And there are various worthy goals, but it's harder for us to protect keeping the population in a certain area without a public purpose for incurring that debt. I understand completely with the challenges in Greater Minnesota, and I grew up in Greater Minnesota. I went to a high school class of 26 people near a town of 300. I know exactly what you're talking about, but we have limited dollars, so where do we spend those limited dollars to the best thing? We've had a whole series of people who've come forward here with a variety of approaches to try to protect both public property and private capacity to make a profit and still live in the area. And I think that's the approach, along with maybe some zoning laws, some enforcement of drainage laws, and looking at a whole complex here throughout the state, because we're coming year after year after year with flooding everywhere, and we don't have an unlimited checkbook. Maybe we need to set up a disaster fund that we deal with year after year, that dollars just go into it for these things, because we're having special session, special flooding, special bills. But it's common, and I think it's going to continue to be common with erratic weather for whatever the reason. So it's a challenging balancing act for us. We've got to try to figure out how to do this.
Would either one of the testifiers like to respond? Mr. Rood.
In response to your question about zoning and so forth, in my previous job for the last 18 years, I'm also was the zoning administrator for Norman County. And since 1993, we have really enforced our ordinances, our floodplain ordinances. We have not built a new house in the floodplain. We've removed, I think we're up into the upper 50s, lower 60s. And these last few here now are the last of the bad ones. And we're just looking to get them out of the way of the problem that, like you say, keeps on reoccurring.
And Madam Chair, just as an addition to that, when you think about the public health and safety, with these people sitting out there unprotected, we put our firefighters, our police, our conservation officers, and everybody else at risk trying to reach these people when they are underwater. And so in many cases, relocation or buying out of these folks is in the best interests of the public health and welfare for the communities in this area. Where they move is another issue, probably more political than it is public health and safety, as was alluded to. But we just can't continue to fight the fight for floods with so many people at significant risk. So with that, the Red River Watershed Management Board and its member watershed districts really appreciate the committee hearing these things at this time. And if you find a way, shape, or means to be able to move this thing forward sooner than later, I think it would be of significant benefit to these communities, to the public at large, and I think it can save us some significant money as we move forward and fight these floods.
Representative Jaskowski has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess it'd be a comment, maybe a follow-up on Representative Hansen's discussion. You know, this last project, it is flood-related. It relates to the local buyout portion of these buyouts. And as a matter of fact, in the 2007 flood that happened in the areas of Minnesota City and Stockton and Rushford and those areas in very southeastern Minnesota, the state government did provide for, as I understand it, 100% of the local buyout coverage. Now, I'm one of those fortunate legislators who in 2007, one portion of my district was flooded, and in 2010, the other end was flooded by a different flood with different circumstances. But it is part of what is now a 25-county flood area from the 2010 flood, in which we are currently in the process of looking at similar circumstances. At least at this point, I think the discussion is moving towards an area of covering 75% of those local buyout costs. And I think many of those communities are hoping there are enough resources available to make it 100% to be consistent with what was done in 2007. I don't know what has happened in the rest of the Red River Valley area. I think we need to be consistent. But members, my point is this. These are flood-type projects, and they are legitimate in that form. There are portions of many of the projects that came before us that are related to environmental and other concerns that I firmly believe we need to take a strong look at using some of the dedicated funds that are now being used to buy up more state lands that are providing more liabilities to the taxpayers of Minnesota to fund these types of remnants of these projects rather than state bonding debt as we look at these. Again, those are my comments. Mr. Harnack, thank you.
Mr. Harnack and Mr. Rood, thank you for being here. And thank we're going to move on to testimony from cities. Thank you so much. First up, we have Kurt Johansson, and on deck is Dan Wilkins.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We've already covered those
two
projects, and I also do not believe that Mike McDonald from Crookston is here. If there are questions on that project, Kent Lacosmo would be in the best positions to answer those questions, and he gives his testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Harnack. Okay, we'll move to Jeff Pulowski from the city of Roseville.
Madam Chair.
And Bruce Albright is on deck. Yes, Mr. Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, just wanted to make you aware that we have some folks on the list still who have driven down especially today long distance, so I would hope we would be able to get them in.
Right. We're going to hold the testimony to between 2 and 3 minutes, if possible, folks here. So we'll, and then we'll take questions at the end if we have time.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Pulowski, and I'm the mayor of the city of Roseau. And thank you for the opportunity again this year to present an update of our ongoing flood mitigation project and then an overview of what we're requesting in state funding for 2011. I could go on and on about the flood of 2002, which wiped out my community, and the work that's been done rebuilding our community. But in short, it's pretty simple. We got flooded bad. We've rebuilt. There's been a significant investment on the tune of $60 million in federal, state, and local money rebuilding our city of 2,800 people. We've built, we talk about buyouts, we got housing projects, two major flood mitigation projects that are already done, and the final piece of the puzzle is the one, you should have a one-page handout. It's got a map on it with some water in it. You've seen lots of water today, but it's the final piece of the puzzle, and that's what's called our East Diversion Project. That's a Corps of Engineers project that's been in the works since shortly after the flood of 2002. There was a one-year economic study done by the Corps, a three-year feasibility study. We got authorization by Congress in 2007, and construction actually began on the project in 2009, and it's ongoing today. So where we're at, and again, this is a Corps project, so the numbers move around a little bit. We've had great support from the state, from Kent Lacusmo's office and on down. But where it stands today is the project, and it's kind of, if you look on the handout, it's a little, it's maybe slightly convoluted, but if you look at the bottom on the numbers, if you go way to the right under project total budget, you'll see $39.8 million. That's the total project cost estimate as of today. The federal share of that, go to the middle column, is $22.4 million, and I won't go into all the breakdowns of that. And then the state share is $17.4 million. Well, to make a long story short, of that $39 million, to date, we've secured about $18 million in state and federal dollars. We've either spent it or it's under grant agreement. We've built two bridges, we've abandoned a railroad, we've acquired all the land, and the first one quarter of the project channel was started last year, and that's what you see a picture of. It's a one-fourth of the channel. The channel is actually 4.5 miles. It's about a mile of the channel. There's not supposed to be water in it, but unfortunately, after when this was taken in September, we had Representative Fabian could attest, we had a significant amount of moisture. So ideally, that diversion will remain dry 90% of the time and only be used to convey water around the city during a high water flood event, of which we've had plenty. We've had three near misses since 2002. The latest was in 2009, and the numbers look scary for the next few weeks, as the rest of the people in this room as well. So anyway, we need to get this done.
10 seconds.
Okay. We need to get this done. It will remove the entire city of Roseau from the 100-year floodplain, and it will not have any negative impact downstream. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm sorry if I went over, but
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you so much. We're going to have questions at the very end if we have time for all the testifiers. Bruce Albright. Okay. And on deck is Carrie Netsky. Please identify yourself for the record and try to keep your comments between 2 and 3 minutes. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for taking time to hear about three projects proposed by the Buffalo Red River Watershed District. I know some of you have been on tour in our watershed and looked at some of the things we're doing. As I was preparing for today, 29 of 68 projects we have included funding through the bonding bill and flood damage reduction to help accomplish those goals. Three of the projects we have listed in the House file today include the Manston Slough Restoration, an area drained by the state of Minnesota in 1890. We are ready to go to construction on that project in 2011. The land that's needed for the project has been acquired by easement, and to make the 75% match requirement listed in the mediation agreement because of the natural resource features, we are in need of $630,000. The second project is the Georgetown Flood Control Levee, similar to Climax, Shelley, Purley, Hendrum, Neillsville, the Highway 75 corridor north of Moorhead. Georgetown is located within our watershed boundaries. Estimated project cost there about $3.5 million. And the final project is Oak Park Flood Mitigation. That has been ongoing. Some of you were there for our groundbreaking ceremony in the fall of 2009. We are happy to report that that is 65% done. We are still in need of $8.7 million to finish that. With me today is Greg Anderson, former chair of Oak Park Township, to talk a little bit about what's happening with Oak Park.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Greg Anderson. I was the chairman of the Oak Park Township Board until 2 days ago, and my term expired, and I'm continuing on to finish this project. And I will be very brief and just throw out some real quick numbers. Oak Park fought a flood greater than the 100-year flood in 1997. We saw a similar flood in 2001. We approached the watershed in 2002 to ask for their help to prevent this in the future. We've been down here to the state since that time getting help to build these dikes. We saw another flood in 2006. In 2009, we saw the record flood of the valley. During that flood, Oak Park Township, to protect about 500 or 600 homes, filled 1.3 million sandbags with strictly volunteers. We have no paid staff. We built 50 to 60 levees around homes or community or neighborhoods, and we lost more than 100 homes to either flood water or sewage backup. We weren't able to get our dikes built in time. In 2010, we fought a similar flood. We reduced our sandbags to less than 30,000. This year, we're facing a flood that could be as bad as 2009. And with the work we've got completed now, we think, again, we can do this with less than 30,000 sandbags. We're at the point where we can finish this thing this year. We just need the funds to get it done. When it's done, we'll protect between 300 and 400 homes inside the dike, including public infrastructure, water and sewer systems. In addition to that, by securing the water and sewer infrastructure here, we protect another 200 homes to the south that share that system that also got backed up with sewage. We're part of the city Moorhead sewer system. So this is a project bigger than just 300 or 400 homes inside that area. Again, I don't mean to rush, but I know your time is valuable, and we do appreciate it. The key term is we have the plans, we have the contractors. We can finish this thing probably 99% this year. We just need funding. Any way this binding bill could get completed soon, we're ready to go. We've got the contractors that are lined up. We just need the money to finish it. And, again, I thank you for your support, and I apologize for being rapid fire, but being on a board like this,
well,
I understand.
You said a lot in the short amount of time. I think we all appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Anderson and Mr. Albright, for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Carrie Netsky. And on deck is John Erickson. Ms. Netsky, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Carrie Netsky. I'm the Executive Director for Area 2 Minnesota River Basin Projects Incorporated, based out of Marshall, Minnesota. Along with me today, I have our Chairman, Commissioner Bob Moline from Murray County. I also have in the audience Kevin Vickerman, County Commissioner from Murray County, and Andrew Lochner, County Commissioner from Brown County, just to show some of the support for our now 9-county Joint Powers Board. Mm-hmm. I did have a prepared statement, but I will go off the cuff in matter of time. You are receiving a little trifold pamphlet that I've put together. In that summarizes much of our organizational history, our purpose, and the work that we do in the realm of flood damage reduction. I will draw your attention to the inside. You will see a map of Minnesota, and then it'll show our watershed highlighted. Basically, where we work are the counties from Ortonville to Mankato on the south side of the Minnesota River. You'll also see we also can work in 4 counties of South Dakota as well. So we have a large watershed. The biggest topographical feature of that watershed is the Buffalo Ridge. You probably know the Buffalo Ridge because of all the wind turbines located on it. But what you may not know is that ridge is extremely steep. In one of our watersheds, the Lac aux Prairies watershed, we will see 80 feet per mile of drop in that one watershed. It'll also gradually go down to around 50 feet per mile in the Redwood watershed. When you compare this to the Red River Valley, and you've heard extensively, you know, the flooding damages they have there with their flat topography, we've got the opposite. It is so steep, it's almost impossible to stop the force of that water before it hits that floodplain and causes all the erosion and sediment problems that we have in our rivers today. Secondly, Area 2 suffers from a very unique second form of flooding. It's called crossover flooding. Not only do those floodwaters run down the Buffalo Ridge to the Minnesota River, it can also go from northwest to southeast from Ortonville to Mankato, and it'll actually jump watersheds. We'll have the Yellow Bank watershed jump into the Lac aux Parles, the Lac aux Parles into the Yellow Medicine, and on down. So, like I said, our flooding dilemmas are actually twofold in this area of the state. Inside your booklet, there'll be a section where you'll see that we've received past bonding appropriations and we've successfully expended them. I will bring your attention to the local match. Area 2 is unique that we do receive 75-25 appropriations, and we've been able to provide much more local match than what is needed. But that flexibility allows a lot more projects and a lot more landowners to afford the projects on the property.
About half a minute.
In this long-standing successful partnership, it's 33 years in the making now, needs to continue by doing our part to reduce those flooding impacts and to keep those sediments and nutrients out of our waters. We are bettering the Minnesota River, the state itself. With that, I will stop. Chairman Moline, would you like to make any comments?
I've been on this board for 7 years, and I just was voted in as chair this year. But this group of board members has a really focus on holding water back for flooding. It is just a great board to work with. The state has been great on us, and we need to keep continuing this project.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you both for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Next we have... we have this. Go ahead. Please state your name for the record.
John Erickson, City Engineer, Austin, Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm here to testify today in regards to House File 960 for the flood hazard mitigation dollars. The City of Austin has used these dollars in the past, and I believe we've used them very successfully. We've been talking a lot about flooding in northwestern Minnesota, and I'm here today to talk about southeastern Minnesota. Our five highest floods have all occurred since 1978. In this, since 2000, we've had record floods in 2000, 2004, 2008, 2010, and actually today when I left Austin, we were under a flood warning. We've had flooding events that have occurred on the Cedar River, Dobbins Creek, and Turtle Creek. So far, Austin has flood mitigation accomplishments. We've acquired approximately 300 residential homes, 10 businesses, and we've had structural projects on Eastside Lake and our North Main. And our North Main is out for bid as we speak for that. With the funding, in 2007, the City of Austin did receive approval for a local option sales tax that was passed overwhelmingly by the community. This was initiated in 2007, and last year alone it generated $1.4 million in local option sales tax for flood mitigation. So with this, the City of Austin is able to provide a 50% match to any projects. This is our number one priority, so we can bring to these projects a 50% match, and the City of Austin is committed to the project we're proposing, which is the Turtle Creek project. This project involves the acquisition of parcels, removal of infrastructure, and structural modifications to that. Once again, we are committed to our 50% match to that project, and we would ask support from the state for flood hazard mitigation dollars.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Mayor of Moorhead, you're on deck. Is there someone else here from Austin, Justin Hansen, or somebody? Please identify yourself for the record.
I have a handout also. I'm Bev Nordby with the Cedar River Watershed District, and I'm just coming today to talk to you a little bit about Cedar River. I'm going to try to do this very fast because I know I want everybody else to have their opportunities too. But Cedar River was established 4 years ago. We're the newest watershed district in the state, and some of you have been out on in our area looking at rim projects and stuff. But anyway, the watershed district is looking at a goal of 20% reduction of flows in the watershed. We've done extensive modeling in the watershed, and if you, when you get your handout, you'll see a picture of the northern part of the watershed, and in the green area is the priority area. It's the Dobbins Creek area, and we've done several models to do that, and what what we're doing is this is the flashiest area. Representative Hansen, you talked a lot about the safety issues and stuff. We have lots of, when it floods, it goes up as fast as it goes down. And we have several roads overtopping, culverts blowing out. We've got the Interstate 90 bridge that just had lots of work done. The DOT is very concerned about the flows in this water, in this sub-watershed. So what we're doing is we're going to just move slowly, and we are going to start. Austin's done a great job with their flood mitigation program, but we want to start looking at the watershed and slowing that water down. So what we've done is we've looked at the very headwaters of the Dobbins Creek area. We call it Dobbins 6. We're looking at a structure in this area. That's the picture of the aerial photo, and it's shovel ready, and we can move on this summer if we get funding for it. So it's we appreciate your offer of letting us come and talk to you, but what our goal is to decrease the flows by 20% in the watershed while working with the City of Austin.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank Mr. Mayor from Moorhead, please, next. And Judy Erickson from Shell Rock, you're on deck. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really do appreciate this opportunity to speak with the committee. Everybody in Minnesota right now is flooding, including our community. Our city engineer was going to be here today, but he's our chief flood fighter.
Mr. Mayor, could you identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. Mark Voxley, mayor of the city of Moorhead.
Thank you.
So our engineer isn't here. He's in charge of the flood fight. I'm the one that was expendable, so I get to be down here. Moorhead usually makes the news because of flooding. We've been making it more the last few years because for some reason we are getting the Red River every spring just a little higher. Corps of Engineers is telling us we've started a 60-year wet cycle in the Red River Valley. What used to be our 100-year floodplain, what we had planned for, what the types of things that we had for flood mitigation up until 2009 really kind of got thrown out the window. 1997 was a major flood for us. At that point, we really took seriously how we could best protect our city. Everything worked fine until 2009 when we realized the Red River was not going to behave the way that it had over the past 125 years. Right after the crest, in 2009, we were down here at the legislature. We started a very aggressive three-year program to mitigate flood damages to the city of Moorhead. We are two-thirds of the way through that project. The booklet in front of you gives you all the statistics and exactly what we've done to date. But basically, there's three things we're doing. First of all, every storm outfall that we have going to the Red River from our city streets, we now have gated, and we have a pump system on it. That way we can shut the water from coming back onto our streets so we can protect our houses if we have a fire, if we need police, whatever it might be. We don't have flooded streets in parts of our town. Very important thing. Second thing we've been doing is buying out homes that have been continually getting flooded, those homes that were built in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, when the Red River was very dry and it looked like a very good place to build. Now we know it's a bad place. We are buying those houses out so we don't have to expend 8, 9, 10, 11, 12,000 sandbags per home to protect it. We figure even with volunteer help, $3 a sandbag is a pretty cheap sandbag. It might be as much as $5. Multiply that times 12,000. Do it every year for the past 3 years like we've done. A tremendous use of resources that we think is really a waste. Third thing we're doing, after we buy out those houses, if it's logical and we have a large area, we're putting in dikes so we can protect the rest of the community. We've built almost 3 miles worth of dike. With the next appropriation, we could build another 7 miles and pretty well completely protect our community up to the 500-foot the 500-year flood level. Contingency for that, if we ever go above a 500-year, we can start laying clay dike down behind it. This has been, like I said, a very aggressive program. We have participated with the state through the Department of Natural Resources. It has been a very, very good program for us, and we really appreciate the help that we've gotten so far from the state. Are there any questions?
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you,
Mr. Mayor, coming all the way from Moorhead. Next, we have Judy Erickson from Shell Rock, and on deck, let's see. Is there Justin Hansen here?
I believe he was with us.
Go ahead.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Judy Erickson, and with me is Brett Banke. He is the administrator for the Shell Rock River Watershed District. And just to be real brief, we have a fact sheet in your packets. The Shell Rock River Watershed District and the City of Albert Lea, we appreciate being included in the amendment for the Flood Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. You know, southern Minnesota also has ongoing flooding and is in flood stage two today, and we just wanted to bring to your attention a project that we have ready to go in the City of Albert Lea with the Shell Rock River Watershed District, and it's the Myers Road Watershed Project. And with that, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. You have a good fact sheet. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Justin, are you prepared to testify? Mr. Hansen. Perfect. Go ahead. You're down here. Let's have you go first.
I'm John Jasky, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Justin Hansen, Mauer Soil and Water Conservation District.
And what we're going to do is just give you a little bit of a bit of background on some flooding that it was occurring last fall in southern Minnesota. I'm going to have the page pass out this map when it upcurrent occurs, and we should also see a fact sheet in your packet that describes the Reinvest in Minnesota program, which uses conservation easements to acquire land that's been damaged via flooding and restore that land for restoration of the landscape and retention purposes for flood control as well as conveyance. And I'll let you take a look at that and ponder that, and then I'll have Mr. Hansen here describe some of the things that are happening in his specific county. As you can see, and as Representative Drazkowski mentioned earlier, the flood from last fall was on top of some floods prior to that, and this flood encompassed I think 29 counties declared in that disaster. We just completed a sign-up for the damaged land there. We had $10 million available. We were able to get $16 million of federal money to go with that, and we will be able to accomplish about one-third of the need with that appropriation. I should also point out that based on a USDA study that was done recently, that state funding along with the federal funding just in this particular case would generate approximately 220 jobs and or support 220 jobs. We have data to show that. So I'll let Mr. Hansen describe what he saw and has seen in his more local area.
Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, John. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have a flyer here, a handout that I just kind of work off of quickly. Just giving a brief summary of the sign-up that we had, and I think it's reflective of many of the other counties who are part of the flood disaster area. We did take 11 applications in a very short period of time, a very short application period, and we had significant interest. We worked with several different landowners, took 11 applications. I think the important part about this is that 9 of those landowners were so, willing or in some ways desperate, I guess, for a conservation program. They're actually donating land in order to get their scores up. And I know, talking with some of my colleagues around the state, this was we quickly knew that there was going to be a lot of need for the program and that this was something that they were going to have to do. And landowners were very receptive to it. And you can see in the box there that we've not just the 2010 flood, we have regular floods in our area. So this program doesn't just protect or restore those areas from last fall, but we're also getting long-term need, protecting the land, very sensitive ground. And this is the most sensitive areas as well, because we did a sign up that was reflective of the flood events, so we're capturing the most critical areas, which is what we're always trying to do. There are a couple pictures.
30 seconds, sir.
There are a couple pictures on the back of examples that we're using. We're not trying to take good cropland. We're just focusing on the very marginal stuff. So these projects are applied for. They're all ready to go. So we're just looking for committee support to fund them.
Thank you for being here today, Mr. Hansen. Thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just going to leave you. We just completed a report that deals with all of the statewide issues. I'll give your committee staff one copy, and it'll be at least on our website, and it goes into some of the history that Mr. Hansen and others have talked about across the state of Minnesota, Red River Valley, Southern Minnesota, and elsewhere, a sense of the past history of the flooding. So thank
Sounds
you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jatchke. Mr. Loxmo, you're a final testifier. Thank you, everyone, for indulging, and members for your patience here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kent Lockesmo, I'm the Director of Capital Investment for DNR. And just to start off, a brief comment about Crookston, since Mike McDonald wasn't here. Their request is for $3 million to finish their flood control project, and that'll protect an additional 183 homes. And they've got that ends up protecting 842 homes in the community. So that's the City of Crookston project. And you've heard from all the cities and watershed districts about the needs that are out there for flood hazard mitigation. And you're getting a handout here that's on two sides. One is on the back side is just the explanation of the flood hazard program. And on the front are just some comments. Basically that, you know, floods happen. They happen statewide. You look at Representative Druskowski's area, 14 inches of rain, and there were 6 inches over a couple thousand square miles. You're going to have flooding. I mean, you can't design around that. The there is, I know people are asking about the current conditions. There's a website on this handout. If you click on that, there's dots on all of the rivers. If you click on those, they show the Weather Service predictions on stage and what's coming down the pipe. And they also, if you really go down that chart a little further, it'll show you what some of the last peak flood elevations have been. And the flood mitigation has been successful. We've had floodplain management as part of that. We've had floodplain management since 1969. What I like to tell people is in Minnesota, what you see flooded are often old houses, because Minnesota obviously built along the rivers when, you know, after statehood or even before statehood. The protection of these projects or these cities, it's by a combination of levees, flood walls, pumping stations, also upstream storage. I think you need a combination of all of those. Flood mitigation is cost effective. FEMA estimates $4 a benefit for every $1 spent. If you look at the Corps of Engineers estimates for the Breckenridge diversion channel, they prevented $26 million of damages and $46 million of damages in 2006 and 2009 combined. So there are definite cost advantages for spending mitigation monies. And we've been successful. There are projects that are completed. You aren't hearing from East Grand Forks and Warren and Chaska, Rochester, Mankato. Those projects have been completed in years past and are functioning well. We have been successful in spending the money. The FY10 and 11 appropriations provided $117 million for flood hazard mitigation. And yes, that is a large amount of money. We've spent, encumbered or spent 95% of that already. We only have about $4 million remaining, and we're kind of holding on to that for contingencies based on what might happen this spring to see where there might be buyouts or other needs. And as you've heard, there's lots of needs looking that we're looking at. Prioritization, how do we deal with this long list of projects that we have in front of us? We look at the amount of community risk. If they're flooded by a five-year event, that's more important to work on than something that's flooded by a 500-year event. And we look for where we can see the most flood benefit. We look at the readiness to spend. Can they actually spend the money in 2011 or spend it immediately? And we also look at leveraging other funds, although there's a caution that I would provide to that with the federal government, you lose control over the timing and the cost, and those can often take a lot longer and cost a lot more than what you initially see, and I've got lots of examples of that if you wish to get into it. The cost share, then, as you've heard today, you know, the more money the state pays, the more projects that we see. And the 2% median household funding scenario that started after 1997, And that started because there's a federal project in East Grand Forks, and under the normal formula, we would pay, the state would pay 50% of the non-federal share. For East Grand Forks, that was $65 million. There was no way that they could afford that, and this this funding scenario then evolved during that time. And it's been on as a rider in all the funding bills since then. And that 2% obligation changes, or it's based on, obviously, the population.
About 30 seconds.
Moorhead's cost was $8.2 million. If you look at the small towns like Purley, Hendrum, and those, it's down in the $30,000 to $50,000 range for their local obligation. And we manage these projects to so they aren't just building, once they have their money in it, that they aren't spending money to build a Cadillac. I mean, we're looking at providing basic flood protection, and if they want to build fancy stuff, that's still on their dime, and we work through that through the contracts. So funding of this program has allowed us to significantly reduce the flood risk in Minnesota, and there is more flood risk that exists, and we can always have a larger flood. But we've certainly had support for this project from the administration, and we would encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Loxmo. Representative Hansen, quick comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I wanted to thank the Chair for the inclusion of South St. Paul in the list and the delete all amendment. We weren't able to have city folks from the city here today, but just to let folks know a little bit about that project, where the stockyards used to be, there are 75-year-old pumping stations that the Corps has designated as not being certifiable. So there's a $2 million request for replacing those pumping stations down on the floodplain right next to the levee, where there are lots of businesses that are right up next to the levee. So I know Mr. Loxmo is familiar with that project and appreciate that it's included.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Well, I just want to thank everyone for being here, for coming from a long distance for many of you, and thank you for your testimony, and thank you for being precise with our time limitations here. Members, meeting is adjourned.